I'd like for you to turn to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11 is a story about the Tower of Babel, and that's going to set the foundation for what I would like to discuss this evening. Now, the whole earth used the same language and the same words. It came about as they journeyed east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and there settled. They said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they used bricks for stone, and they used tar for mortar. They said, "Come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into heaven. And let us make for ourselves a name, otherwise we will be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. The Lord said, "Behold, they are one people. They all have the same language. And this is what they begin to do. And now nothing which they propose to do will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, so that they will not understand one another's speech." So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore the name, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth. After the flood, God had given a command saying that, just like he had given to Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply and fill the whole earth. Mankind, though, was fearful of that. And they decided that they would rather stay in one spot. And so they built a city to attract people there so that they might collect in one spot. And that tower, they said, would make a name for themselves. Mankind was united, but the problem was they were united in sin, which is what God was talking about. God took the drastic step of making it hard for mankind to work in harmony. What he did was remove our ability to communicate with each other, making it more difficult for us, for mankind to communicate. And the result was, as it says in verse 7, looking back at it again, "Come, let us go down and from there confuse their language so that they will not be able to understand one another's speech." What happened was there was misunderstanding. People talked, but others could not listen. You know, that can happen again today. Not because of a language barrier, but simply because people just don't listen. Take a look at John chapter 8. John chapter 8, and in verse 43. John chapter 8, and in verse 43. "Why do you not understand what I am saying? It is because you cannot hear my words." And that's interesting that Jesus is saying that. Jesus is standing in front of them. He's speaking their language. They are hearing his words in one sense, but they're not understanding what he's saying. They're not really listening. In James chapter 1, and starting with verse 19, James chapter 1, starting with verse 19, it says, "For this you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God." The first thing we all have to do is be quick to hear. Too often we make responses before we really know what the other person thinks. We really don't listen. We already decided what the answer would be. I've seen that a lot of times when I talk to people, especially in marriage counseling. Somehow when people get married for a while, they start to think that they know what the other person's going to say. And a lot of arguments come from not what was actually said, but from what was assumed that other person's going to say in response. They don't listen. People typically get angry over what they think other people meant to say and not what was actually said. No, we're not to make judgments until we have all the facts in. Take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. And in verse 9, it says, "Do not be eager in your heart to be angry, for anger resides in the bosom of fools." We shouldn't jump to conclusions, especially ones that are going to make us mad. But think about also in Genesis 11, there was talk, but without common language, there was no meaning to people's words as far as one person understanding the other person. That also comes as a problem when we try to communicate. We oftentimes talk, but we're not using the same meaning for the words. In Proverbs chapter 10, Proverbs chapter 10 and in verse 13, it says, "On the lips of the discerning, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks understanding. Wise men store up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is ruined at hand." The foolish person thinks the more he says, the more likely he's going to say something right. It's the other way around. The more we say, the more opportunities we have to say something wrong. Also in Proverbs 10, down in verse 19, "When there are many words, transgression is unavoidable." You're going to slip up the more you say. And what Proverbs also tells us is that calmness is shown and understanding is increased, believe it or not, by saying less. The few words that are said, but choice words actually bring about better understanding. In Proverbs again, this time chapter 17, and in verse 27, "He who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who is, has a cool spirit is a man of understanding." When we want to communicate, one of the things we ought to do is think about what we say. Pick those words carefully. And yes, we don't say as much, but we get understanding across. And that again, if we go back to James, if we look at it again in James 1 and verse 19, it says to be quick to hear and slow to speak. Think about what you're going to say first. But also, when communication broke down in the Tower of Babel, the result was no progress in Genesis 11 verse 8. Building stopped because they couldn't continue without understanding. We have to understand that too as far as a church. In Ephesians chapter 4, Ephesians chapter 4, starting with verse 1. It says, "Therefore, I, the prisoner of the Lord, implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing tolerance for one another in love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace." Notice what's being there. The church is to strive for unity. That means tolerating one another, working together, listening to one another. It requires communication. In fact, later in this chapter, in Ephesians 4 and verse 15, Paul says, "But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into him who is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by what every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love." Every part is necessary. And every part supplies that unity. that gold by speaking the truth in love. In fact, it's the lack of communication that leads to ignorance and leads to decay in a church. Starting with verse 17 again of Ephesians 4, "For this I say and affirm together with the Lord that you walk no longer just as the Gentiles also walk, in the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. And they have become callous, having given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness." Notice how he emphasizes that they're darkened understanding. They have ignorance. That's the opposite of what he just said the church was supposed to do. The church is there to build its members up, to teach, to edify, that each speak truth with one another. There's growth because of knowledge and understanding through the communication that we have. So how do we prevent this? Well, Paul says, where to communicate. Starting with verse 20 of Acts chapter, or Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, starting with verse 20. "But you did not learn Christ in this way. If indeed you have heard him and have been taught in him, just as truth is in Jesus, that in reference to your former manner of life, you lay aside the old self, which is being corrupted in accordance with the lust of deceit, and that you be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and put on the new self, which is in the likeness of God, created in righteousness and holiness of the truth. Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down in your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity. He who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he may have something to share with the one who has need. Let there be no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only what word is as good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. Do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you have been sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ has also forgiven you." Take notice of that. All the way through here, in verse 21, he says, we learn the truth. We listen. In verse 25, he said, we tell the truth to those around us. In verse 26 and 27, we stop being angry with people. We need to talk. We need to listen to what other people say. In Ephesians 4, verse 29, we limit our speech to what is good for other people to hear. We don't fill in with a bunch of empty words. We pick our words carefully and saying, this is what this person needs to hear. And in verse 31 and 32, we speak kind things to others. We increase the other person's desire to hear what we have to say. Now going back to Genesis 11, again 8 and 9, what ended up happening is the world divided. There was division. There was strife. They couldn't work together because the language wasn't there. The communications wasn't there. See, that's also the problem we have today, is when we don't speak the truth and when empty words are used and there's really no real communication, what you have is strife. Empty words, words of anger, words of suspicion about other people's motives. Take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6, we're going to start with verse 3. 1 Timothy 6, verse 3. "If anyone advocates a different doctrine and does not agree with sound words, those of our Lord Jesus Christ, and with the doctrine conforming to godliness, he is conceited and understands nothing. But he has a morbid interest in controversial questions and disputes about words, out of which arise envy, strife, abuse of language, evil suspicions, and constant friction between men of depraved mind, and deprived of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. Now, as a church, we're supposed to be striving for unity. That requires everyone seeing everyone in the same way and treating everyone in the same manner. But that's what Paul meant when he said in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 10, 1 Corinthians 1 verse 10, "Now I exhort you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all agree, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you may be made complete in the same mind and in the same judgment." We have to see everyone the same way and treat everyone in the same manner. We have the same care for each other. In fact, 1 Corinthians 12, down in verse 25. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 25. "So that there be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another." We can't do that when we don't talk. We can't gain a lack of division, a unity, if there's no communication. And what happened with the Tower of Babel is people scattered. They got into their own little groups and scattered across the world. They isolated themselves, which is what God wanted people to do, is go across the world. But I want you to understand, people don't work well in isolation. From the very beginning in Genesis chapter 2, when God created Adam, he made this observation that remains true to this day. Genesis chapter 2 and in verse 18. "Then the Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. I'll make him helper suitable to him." Mankind does not function well by himself. We need the help of other people. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, or chapter 4, Ecclesiastes chapter 4 in verse 9, chapter 4, starting with verse 9, "Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either one of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Furthermore, if two lie down together, they keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? And if one can overpower him who is alone, two can resist him. A cord of three strands is not quickly torn apart." We do better with other people around us. And thus, when we see about the church and the interest of getting us all to heaven, it's about a group helping each other. Yes, we're judged individually, but it's the church that helps us pull together. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 2. No, not Ephesians, Philippians. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2, starting with verse 3. Philippians chapter 2, starting with verse 3. "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others." Sometimes people don't understand that. I've run across several times now, here since I've been preaching here. Multiple times I've run across people who take offense that somebody is interested in them, because they want to live in isolation. They don't want other people knowing about them for a variety of reasons. But I want you to notice that part of the church is required to take interest in one another It's not because of gossip or anything else or looking for how to bring somebody down. We're trying to get people to heaven. We're trying to build one another up. We're striving for unity. That means communication is necessary. We share burdens and we share good things. We've been using the passage in Galatians 6, but again, Galatians chapter 6, and in verse 2, bear one another's burdens and thereby fulfill the law of Christ. And down in verse 6, Galatians 6, verse 6, the one who is taught the word is to share all good things with the one who teaches him. But also consider Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12 and in verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Again, there's this idea that we are sharing life's burdens and sharing life's joys. We are interested in one another. We are sharing life together. See, a church is a community of believers. And sometimes we don't think about where that word comes from. Have you thought about what community means? It's the same root word for commune, communion, communicate. They're all from the same word. They share the same root word, and it means the idea of sharing. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 16, the old King James Version used the word communicate. Newer versions say share, but in Hebrews 13, verse 16, and do not neglect doing good and sharing or communicating. For with such sacrifices, God is pleased. We're not just talking about, you know, a common pot that we share from. We're talking about sharing lives, which requires communicating with one another. Now, the early church in Acts chapter 2, Acts chapter 2 and in verse 42, spent time in fellowship. Acts 2 and verse 42, they were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. They shared their lives together. They shared the gospel together. It was a part of who they were. And notice the involvement that came as a result of it. We look down at verse 44. And all those who had believed were together and had all things in common. And they began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them with all, as anyone might have need. Day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, they were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God and finding favor with all the people. And the Lord was adding to their numbers day by day those who were being saved. These people were involved in each other's lives. Again, not the idea of being a gossip or a busybody, not that type of involvement. They shared life together. They sat down with meals together. They had fun together. They did things together. They worked on the gospel together. And there's profit in sharing. Because one of the things we're supposed to do is encourage one another. Take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 7. 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 14. Paul was going to send a man down to the Corinthians. And I want you to notice what he says. For if in anything I have boasted to him about you, I was not put to shame, but we all spoke all things to you in truth, so also our boasting before Titus proved to be the truth. What is Paul doing? He was telling Titus, oh, you should see this group down in Corinth, how good they are, how well they work together, all the things they're involved in. Was he gossiping? No. He was encouraging Titus to want to go down to Corinth. Saying, you've got to meet these people. But that meant he knew about their lives. He knew about what they were involved in. There was communication there. When we get together as people to worship God in Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 23. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together as a habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. How is it that a church figures out how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds? I didn't know what motivates you. I didn't know what interests you. So that I can encourage you to do the right things. We all need to be that way. And there are always life's problems in James chapter 5 and in verse 16. James 5 verse 16, therefore confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. The effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. When I have problems, I should be able to go to my brethren. Find somebody and say, hey, I got this difficulty. I don't know how to handle this. Can you help me? This thing looks way too much for me. Will you pray for me? And pray with me. We're to develop a love for each other that would even lead us to the point of laying down our lives for one another. In 1 John chapter 3, 1 John chapter 3, look at verse 16. We know love by this, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees a brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word and with tongue, but in deed and truth. Why don't you think about that? How do you do that by living in isolation? There are people who think that you go to church, sit down, and walk out and never talk to anybody. And that's perfectly fine with them. How do you get to the point where you want to lay down your lives for somebody you don't know? Other than you may recognize their face in passing. Again in 1 John chapter 4 and in verse 11, beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has seen God at any time. If we love one another, God abides us and his love is perfected in us. We ought to love God. How do we do that? We learn to love each other. We can see each other. And therefore we can develop a love for God whom we can't see. See, the design of the church is that we all need each other. We read one passage out of 1 Corinthians 12, but I want to read the context. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and we're going to start with verse 12. 1 Corinthians 12, starting with verse 12. For even as the body is one, and yet has many members, and all the members of the body, though they are many, are one body, so also is Christ. Now I want you to think about that, those of you. We got plenty of people who have medical backgrounds now. How well does the body work when the parts don't communicate? When they're not involved with each other. When they're not participating with each other. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free. We are all made to drink of one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot says, because I am not of the hand, I am not a part of the body, it is not for this reason any less a part of the body. In other words, you can't just say, hey, I don't want to be part. You are a part, whether you want to be or not. Because you're a Christian. And if the ear says, because I'm not an eye, I am not a part of the body, it is not for this reason any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? But now God has placed the members, each one of them, in the body, just as he desired. If they were all one member, where would the body be? But now there are many members, but one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Or gates again to the head, the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, it is much truer that the members of the body, which seem to be weaker, are necessary. And those members of the body which we deem less honorable, on with these we bestow more abundant honor. And our less presentable members become much more presentable. Whereas our more presentable members have no need of it. But God has so composed the body, giving much more abundant honor to that member which is lax, so that there be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now you are Christ's body and individually members of it. If you don't understand what Paul's saying, pound your finger with a hammer sometime. And it isn't just your finger that goes, ouch. Your whole body cringes. And that's his point. We're involved with each other. We share life together. We can't live in isolation. We can't even isolate ourselves from the world. Think of all the wickedness that's going around with us. And sometimes it's tempting to say, oh, wouldn't it be nice to just all go out someplace and we'll just start our own community, just Christians. You know, we'll just get away from the rest of this world. That's not a new idea, by the way. Monotheism has come from that. Let's just get away from the rest of the world. But notice what Christ says in Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 13. You are as the salt of the earth, but if the salt becomes tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It is no good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world, and a city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all those in the house. So let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Can you say, well, I'm just going to be all by myself? If you don't influence the world around you, you're useless. That's the point about salt. The whole reason we put salt in something is not because that one little piece of the salt touches is something that made good. We want the salt in the batch so that the whole thing becomes tasty. We are to influence the world around us. Isolating ourselves is putting a light under the basket. It makes the light worthless. Now, we don't want the world influencing us. But notice in James chapter 1. James chapter 1 and verse 27. Pure religion and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unspotted by the world. We don't want the world influencing us. We have to keep that out. In 1 John chapter 2. And in verse 15, 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. And people have read this and said, okay, I got to keep the world out. I'm going to separate myself from all the world. That's not what's being talked about here. The world is not to influence us, but God doesn't want us to isolate ourselves either. Go back to John chapter 17 when Jesus was praying about his disciples. In John 17, and in verse 5, it says, "Now, Father, glorify me together with yourself, with the glory which I had with you before the world." And I believe I need a verse 15. Yes, John chapter 17, verse 15. "I do not ask you to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil one." That's what Jesus is saying. I don't want you. I don't want God to take the disciples out of the world. But we're to be in the world, but not influenced by the world. Take a look at Philippians again. Philippians 2. We read passages earlier, but now look down at verse 14. Philippians chapter 2. Starting with verse 14. "Do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you may prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory, because I did not run in vain or toil in vain." Now, notice what Paul said. We are to be blameless and above reproach while being in the middle of wickedness. We have to influence the world around us. That means we have to be there. We cannot live in isolation. We can't even avoid the sinners of the world. But you know what's happened is that we are in a society where isolation has become more and more of a problem. I was fascinated as I was starting to study this. I got in on this because of somebody's question, but as I was digging out things, you know, there were people talking about this back in the 70s. And I found some articles on it. But it hasn't done anything else but got worse. Think about what has happened. We have cars that make it very easy for us to travel. We can go anywhere we want. But what do? You get in the car, you close the door, you turn on your radio station, and you go there. You're not involved with anybody else the whole time you're traveling. Just you or you and your family. You don't interact with anybody. You get to work, and what do? Especially in the large companies. You get to work, you walk in, you go into your cubicle, and you're right in the middle of a whole bunch of other people, and you barely interact with them, because you got your job to do. And yeah, you might talk to a few, but you're in the middle of a bunch of people and you don't really interact. And then you go home. And our homes are so nice now. We got heating, we got air conditioning. So we keep the windows closed. We don't go outside as much. You don't see your neighbors because they're inside their house closed up. And it doesn't matter because we got entertainment piped in. And we got TV and we got telephones and everything else, but we have no personal interaction. You know, people are committed or attracted to bad news. That's what people like to watch, is bad news. But you know that generates fear? You never know if your neighbor might be some crazy child molester or mass murderer. And so we tend to isolate ourselves. Because who knows what the neighbor's like, because we don't know him anymore. We never talk to him. So we don't fill our... the fears with anything with knowledge, we have those gaps and we fill it with our own personal fears. And then we tend to look at everyone with a measure of fear. And then comes the internet. And we can connect with people. And we can talk to people we haven't talked to in ages. But we know we do it all without interacting. We don't have personal exchanges. We isolate ourselves while being involved. There's appearance of interaction, but there's no socializing that's going on. When you go shopping, we do exactly the same thing. You walk into one of these big department stores and you walk down the aisles, there's people all around you and you don't talk. I got thinking about that because I was so surprised about 2 or 3 weeks ago. A gentleman stopped me in the store in No Frills. And at first I didn't recognize him. I looked at his kid and I suddenly realized, oh yes. And he had to remind me, I taught his kid Taekwondo. Okay. Kid's a lot bigger now. So that's why I didn't recognize him at first. And he was telling me all these things. It dawned on me while I was doing this lesson. You know how rarely that ever happens? I go through stores all the time. I never talk to anybody. I probably see people I should know all the time, and it never registers. We live in a world where we're with people and we don't interact with people. We isolate ourselves. And that's because that's what the society thinks is acceptable. That's why it's hard for us today to spread the gospel. Think about it. Somebody comes up to your door and knocks. We just did this afternoon. A bunch went out. Somebody goes up to your door and knocks, and you know what you do? Pretend like you're not there. Just let go away because I don't want to interact. The shame is the world's influencing us. The world is getting isolationist. And we get to the point where we think that's the way the church ought to be. And we think we ought to not know what one another is and not to share our lives with each other and that we shouldn't be involved in each other and not have people over and think that's the right way because that's the way the world is. The world's going the wrong direction. The cure is communications. We have to talk to one another. We have to interact. We have to get involved. If I'm going to rejoice with you, I need to know what's going on in your life. When you get a reward, I like to know about it. I want to have some fun too. Other than sitting in a building studying. And when things go wrong, I want to know. I want to share the burden. But it means we need to talk. All of us. I hope you think about these things. If there's anyone here tonight who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time to become a part of the church than become a part of God's family. If there's anyone here who is a child of God, would like the prayers of the brethren on behalf. Again, we offer that opportunity. Why don't you come forward and stand and sing the song for you?